Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the independent soccer show bringing you opinionated English Premier League analysis. Here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
You are listening to another edition of the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith. Greetings to you wherever you may be, and now I bring in, after a summer break, my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Yeah, short intro because I don't want Google to kill this again. So just get right into it because, you know, damn Google messing up our show here. And oh, boy, I can't wait till everything's digital when I'm, you know, 60 and need surgery. Boy, I can't wait for that crap.
We had a little hiccup in the initial recording, but we're here. We've rectified the situation. And so we're back from our little summer break. So just like they did back in the day, Corey, when you were in elementary school.
Yeah.
Let's just do it, right?
Finger paint.
You get up in front of the class and the teacher says, all right, everybody, one by one, get up and tell everybody what you did over the summer. So what did you do with our little two-week hiatus?
Man, I've been crash course in gardening, you know, growing some herbs, growing some watermelon, both a red and a yellow watermelon. If anybody hasn't seen this newfangled yellow watermelon, you'll need to get on this bandwagon. It's pretty awesome. Yeah, dealing with critters every morning, like I was telling you before we come on air, you know, we got some chipmunks and squirrels that like to chase the dog around. You know, we got frogs that come in and attack all the moss on the back porch every morning. So, you know, I'm back to living the smallish southern town life, you know, dealing with critters and gardening. So yeah, that's pretty much what I've been. Got back into reading regularly again, so you know, some post-apocalyptic novels to go along with our soon-to-be post-apocalyptic election cycle.
Okay. Outstanding.
Yeah. Outstanding. How's that teach?
Yeah, a round of applause for you, everybody. Right now, me, I'm a little late to the party on this one, but over the past couple weeks, I have found the wonder, especially in these hot summer months when it's been mid-90s and above here in Denver, which is odd. But the joy and the national craze that I'm sure I'm late to now, which is these self-serve yogurt places where you pile up a couple pounds of yogurt into a paper dish. And then you pour gummy bears and chocolate syrup and all that stuff on there, and then they weigh it, and then you gorge yourself to beat the heat with the nice and cool yogurt.
Yeah, I haven't heard about this. I'm busy on the yellow watermelon bandwagon.
Okay, well, I'm sure they have some in Atlanta. In fact, I know they will.
Yeah, well, then I gotta go to 35 miles into Atlanta.
Yeah, self-serve yogurt. That's where it's at.
All right.
So there you go. All right. Well, let's just get the crowd fired up again because we're back and we're ready to talk some footy. And with this, the new Premier League season is now just weeks away. So we're going to be talking some Premier League after this summer of international football. And we're very pleased to have it almost back. So, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that. Still 2 weeks away, and you know, I'm excited for the season. I'm not excited to wait the 2 weeks, you know, through all the transfer rumor BS and all the lamenting of players that, you know, your club didn't sign.
Yeah, there's going to be a fair amount of that from now until the close of the window, but as we always say, block that out of your heads, boys and girls.
Yeah, lamentations and tales of woe of players you don't sign.
That's right. If you don't like it, play FIFA with an unlimited budget. You can buy who you want. So let's talk some managers.
All right.
Pretty big news here, at least in the bottom portion of the table. Today, of course, it was announced Friday that Sam Allardyce was taking over as the new England manager. But he was formally introduced to the world today in a press conference. And he had quite a few interesting things to say. So just as a general topic here to get us started, they asked him about his style of play. Is it unfair at this time? Is it too much of a critique to say that Big Sam is a lawn ball artist?
don't know, because I mean, obviously he tried to play a little more expansive football his last year with West Ham, but during the crunch time of the season, he basically reverted back to it. But I guess it won't be long ball in the sense that he can't play Chris Samba up top, you know, as a target man, because Chris Samba's not English. So, although I don't know, maybe he'll play Gary Cahill as his target man.
Well, he could recall Andy Carroll, of course.
Yeah,
which I would almost expect to happen. Hey, maybe this might revive Peter Crouch's international career.
Yeah, but he'll be 35 next year, I think.
Oh, Crouchy, knocking down some long balls.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, like I said, he wasn't long ball as he was when he was at Blackburn, when he was playing a center half at you know, as his target man. But he's obviously never going to be confused with Pep Guardiola or, you know, Arsene Wenger or any of the Klopp or any of these other managers that, you know, want to play pressing and, you know, the passing style, as it were. I'm trying to avoid saying tiki-taka here.
I got you. So he did say some interesting things. First of all, he said, well, there's proof that I'm not a long ball artist and that my tactics are adaptable. He's like, if I was a long ball artist, how did I get away with playing tiny Jermaine Defoe as a lone striker all last year with Sunderland? Which is a fair point.
Well, yeah, it just means you kick a long ball for the short guy to chase. Duh. Doesn't okay. mean a long ball has to go to a tall target. It just means you kick the long ball over the top for the short guy to for the rabbit to chase.
There's that. and then they asked him what to describe his style of play, and I liked what he said because he touched upon something that we always harp about. He said it's not about tactics and formations. He's like, the modern player has to be adaptable, and we're going to adapt our tactics to the situation of the game, to the opposition, and to the players at my disposal, which is a pretty pragmatic approach.
Yeah, and as we've talked about multiple times here, Arsene Wenger's talked about it. You know, I'm pretty sure Guardiola's talked about it. We're basically in a transitional type of time period of going from tactics to where that's part of the reason people are having trouble signing strikers is, as Wenger's noted before, is that strikers kind of a – or, you know, the traditional striker is kind of a dying position, and all the forwards are these kind of, you know, withdrawn half attacking midfielder, half winger, you know, types, or these – attacking players, but they're not quite, you know, strikers that sit on the back line like the old style do. But meaning that because of that, a lot of these tactics are adaptable because you don't have guys that, you know, play in one quote unquote natural position. You know, that you can play certain players in multiple positions, and you almost have to nowadays because what is, you know, what's a natural position now when you, like I said, when everybody wants to press high up the pitch now, having static positions or static area or, you know, less static areas on the pitch is almost locking yourself into getting pressed and losing the ball these days, it seems like. I might have wandered off the point there.
That's okay. I won't hold it against you. It won't be the first time, and it's not the last time.
But I do remember Sam saying that, you know, he actually does study tactics quite a good bit, and I know he's actually – a lot of people don't know that, but he's one of the big proponents of a lot of the analytical data that, you know, not the kind of fantasy stats that, you know, we as fans tend to track, but he's actually one of the longtime proponents of analytical data. So, you know – as much as we've made fun of him in the past, a lot of that is tongue-in-cheek because, again, choosing a style isn't the same thing as not knowing how to play other tactics. It's just playing it's generally playing a tactical style that either you're the most comfortable with or that you're most comfortable with because that's what your personnel is best suited to as well. I think sometimes that's something that we kind of lose sight of as analysts and fans as well.
Yeah, and I have no doubt he'll get England playing better. Are they going to be winning trophies or, you know, getting to semifinals and major tournaments? No, but I think he'll get more out of this group because he everybody who knows him well says that he's a fantastic motivator. I know people don't want to hear that because that's not part of the game, right? Because
that's what the English want to hear because they're always going on about the need more passion and bleeding for the crest and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm more talking about the American crowd.
Yeah.
Who don't really think motivating has a place in the game. But so, yeah, I think he'll do a job. And as you did say, in his last year at West Ham, they actually played some pretty attractive football. They really did.
Yeah, and I don't think England's going to start winning trophies, but I think they're going to become a difficult team to beat because Allardyce's teams are, you know, whatever style they play, whether it's long ball or whatever you want to call it, they're generally – fairly compact, you know, hard to break down physical sides. So I think that's going to suit a lot of English players well. Now, the simple fact of the matter is English, England just doesn't have enough of those top tier or, you know, whatever you want to call them, world-class elite players to compete for titles, you know, consistently. But in terms of being competitive, I think they have enough talent that with Allardyce being able to, you know, have his sides being compact, I think they're going to be a pretty tough team to break down.
There you go. All right, we'll move on. Now, a side move from Allardyce leaving Sunderland was they needed a manager late in the game here. And so they plucked out a former Premier League manager, David Moyes, formerly of Everton and Manchester United, of course, and most recently being sacked in Spain by Real Sociedad. So how big of a disruption is this to Sunderland having to replace a manager, you know, just 2.5 weeks before the Premier League season opens?
I don't think it's that big of a disruption. Soccer club preseasons aren't necessarily as structured as a lot of American sports preseasons are. And there's actually quite a bit of turnover and, you know, a lot of times a lot of players sit out the first couple weeks of a preseason because they've been playing international tournaments anyway. So I don't think it's as big of a disruption as maybe we think it is. And, you know, in the case of Sunderland with a manager like Moyes, I mean, he's going to come in and play a pretty simplistic, and I don't mean that in the condescending way, but he's going to come in and have a simplistic, compact style that's probably going to actually suit Sunderland well because they've kind of become the new Coventry where, you know, they basically, you know, they're going to battle relegation every year and anything above 15th, 14th place is going to be, you know, a modicum of success for them. So with the compact style, I don't think it'll be that big of a deal for them because it might take a couple weeks or, you know, well into the season before the transfer starts, before they even get a couple of players to maybe build on that, you know, on a compact side, you know, the kind of the Emanuele Jaccarini kind of players where they can kind of add to that or, you know, add a little creativity to that compactness.
Gotcha. And, yeah, so we'll get into more on Moyes next week and other managers because next week will be our annual new manager show. So we have a lot to talk about with this late move. And by then, I would imagine that we'll have another manager to talk about that's going to be plucked out of the blue here with the news that Steve Bruce has left Hull City Tigers or whatever the heck they're being called these days because of disagreement with ownership, which we have documented a lot on this very show.
Yeah, although Akam or whatever his name is has been fairly quiet recently. But yeah, with Steve Bruce out the door, does that mean Alex Bruce is going to put in a transfer request pretty soon too?
It's possible.
Yeah.
He may go wherever Steve goes.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's where it's going to, you know, with what's going to happen, you know, end up at Ipswich or something.
Yeah, because I guarantee you, come December, when some championship side or maybe even a Premier League side is struggling, he's a guy who will be a high on a lot of people's lists.
Wait, he's kind of – Alex Bruce is kind of one of those you know, to use a baseball term, he's kind of a 4A player, not quite good enough to, you know, to be major league full-time, but a little better than, you know, the minor league. So he's kind of like championship plus.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. And the rumors have been all summer that Bruce was unhappy and had a lot to do with, I think, transfers. Because he knows that they need a lot of players. I mean, they need a lot of help to have any chance to stay up. And they haven't brought anybody in, and they were having some crazy injury crisis to where they were down to 13 fit players.
Well, yeah, and what, I think three of their best players last year were – they were all on loan.
That too. So it was a disagreement, I think, between the level of investment that he wanted to see in the club to have a legitimate chance to stay up. And they need a lot of work.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what I meant. That's – it's obvious that they need to. He wants to buy players because that's what I meant. That three of their best players, I think it was three, they were all on loan. So obviously, when your three best players are guys that are on loan, that means that the owner or the, you know, the board's been tight with the money.
Yeah, and the rest of the team is essentially the same that they had when they were relegated 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So. It'll be interesting to see the quality of manager that they'll be able to get to come into this job, because it's going to be not highly desirable, I would say.
We might have to go back and get crazy Phil Brown to retake the position.
Or maybe get Ian Holloway.
Yeah, there you go, crazy Ian.
Just for the press conferences and for us. I hope, selfishly, I hope they bring back Ian just – for the sound bites that we could play on the show.
Well, that's what I was just about to say, soundbite Ian.
All right, so old Steve Bruce left because of transfer, so that's, we'll get right into this now. Now, we did say that the next couple weeks would be very interesting to see on what big fish would be snapped up in the transfer market that might spark the activity, and there really hasn't been a whole lot. A lot of the big guys still haven't moved, but one shoe did drop in this past week, Corey, and that would be N'Golo Kanté making the move from the champions of Leicester City to Chelsea Football Club. And that price is £35.8 million.
So about just $50 million.
Yeah, and so just your quick thought on that. Not pounds, sorry, euros.
Okay.
My bad, jeez.
Off
my game.
Yeah, I mean, my thought on it is it's not really that surprising. I mean, you know, when you're plucked from obscurity 2 years, and I don't know what his wage was at Leicester, but, you know, regardless of winning the championship, I can't imagine that he was making that much money if he was plucked from the seventh division 2 years ago or whatever it was. So, you know. Being an immigrant from France, I'm sure that he basically moved to Chelsea to set his family up for life, which I can't blame him. But yeah, I mean, so I think that the move is basically a money move, and it's, you know, kind of goes to show that players don't always necessarily play for trophies like we think we do, or it's one of those he got. Maybe it's, you know, he realizes, well, We won a championship with Leicester. That ain't happening this year because, you know, we basically punched above our weight last year, so I might as well jump ship to Chelsea and make some money.
There you go. And you hit on the number one point I wanted to make. This is an unbelievable story because in 2013, he went to a Ligue 1 club on a free transfer. And according to the Transfer Market website, his value was estimated at $50,000 3 years ago, he was worth $50,000, and now he's being sold for $35.8 million. So just think about that in terms of the gulf there is in soccer. Internationally, it's a problem for everybody. The scouting, when a guy could be sitting on the street, and then 3 years later, he's playing for, you know, one of the biggest clubs in the world for an inflated fee of $35.8 million, when 3 years ago, anybody could have had him for, you know, a tenner.
Yeah, well, I think it just goes to show one of the reasons why we watch sports in the first place. I mean, there's a science to player development, but at the same time, you can't necessarily measure somebody's determination and will, and that, you know, or what's the point I'm trying to make here? Not that the scouts all missed the plot, so to speak, but, you know, that something, you know, sometimes something just clicks for a player and all of a sudden, you know, they just burst onto the scene. And who knows, maybe he moves to Chelsea and all of a sudden it falls apart and we come to find out, you know, he made a pact with Satan and all of a sudden he's, you know, his talent's out the window. Who knows?
Ooh, it's kind of like a damn Yankees type of plot.
Yeah, or the what's the old Robert Johnson guitar legend?
Oh yeah, that too.
Where he was terrible and they came back the next year to play to the same roadhouse and so, you know, all of a sudden he's one of the best guitarists in the world.
Okay. Last question I'll ask you on this front and then we'll move on to a couple other moves. Some people on Twitter I was conversing with when this move was announced, some Chelsea faithful were happy because they are saying that Conte is basically Makelele 2.0. Is that
pretty much?
Is that sound about accurate in your book, or is that or has he not proven enough yet to be able to get that moniker?
Well, yeah. I mean, technically speaking, he hasn't proved as much as Makelele, but you know, that's one of those. What exactly does that mean? I mean, he's won an EPL title, so even if it's a fluke, can we really begrudge somebody that kind of accomplishment? You know what I mean? Because even if you fluke your way into a league title, you know, you still done it over 38 games. So, like I said, can we really begrudge somebody if they haven't necessarily proven that? You know, I mean, hell, Sissoko played like shit for 2 years and he had two good games and everybody wanted to buy him in the tournament. So, you know, I mean, are we now going to begrudge some guy because he actually, you know, helped lead his team to the EPL title?
Yeah. And Sissoko hasn't been sold yet, by the way, but we'll see what club is dumb enough to invest such money in him. But no, I'm just saying that, yeah, this Conte move looks like a great fit. But again, you never know. He may not adjust to some guys just can't handle the pressure. And I don't know, maybe Chelsea's too big of a club. I don't know. I don't have any idea about his makeup. But you've seen players falter in similar situations.
Well, yeah, and it'll definitely be interesting to see if he plays the same role that he did for Leicester, because now with Mourinho not at Chelsea, even if they play with two holding midfielders, they're not going to be quite as I don't think both of those holding players are going to be quite as defensive what they are or what they were with Mourinho. So does that now mean that Modric gets to sit deeper and, you know, stay more at home where he's probably more effective than trying to go a little forward where Conte's got a little bit of a little bit more about him going forward than Modric does. At least I think he does, especially when Modric is more imposing physically, because I was kind of surprised at that when I saw Conte transfer. I knew he was kind of smallish, but I didn't realize he's 5'6" and a half. He's freaking my size. And then here he is, one of the best defensive, you know, tackling midfielders in the game, if not the best last year.
Yeah, and it goes back to our point that you can't measure heart. And in soccer, you don't have to be 6'3", 220 to be a good player.
Or you don't have to necessarily destroy somebody in a tackle to be physically effective.
That too. All right, other moves that we'll mention. You mentioned Sissoko. Well, one of his former teammates has made a move. Wijnaldum, the Dutch player, has made a move from Newcastle to Liverpool for a salty 27.5 million euros, which makes me laugh.
You know, so I mean, for the season Wijnaldum had, I think it's a fairly decent price considering, you know, you probably add about 10 to 12 million in the so-called English boost, you know, by buying inside of England or, you know, between English clubs. But yeah, for a relegated side to get over 20 million, that's a pretty good deal on Newcastle's part, I think.
No, it's a great business.
That's actually a very good move. Yeah.
Yeah. They've spent a lot of money adding championship players and bottom tier prem players. So I think we'll see. Newcastle will be an interesting story because I think they have a pretty good chance to come right back up. especially with the news, and I guess we never talked about this, but we will mention that Rafa Benitez is staying on, which is beyond crazy, still in my mind. So they're going to have, I mean, probably the best manager he could have. Again, I don't know if he'll be able to navigate the championship. But Newcastle is a big story.
Well, whatever comes of that, I think the decision to stay has to be respected, because, you know, how many people would just would have jumped ship and, well, I didn't save them. I can move on. I could go back to Spain. You know, I talk about that all the time, that, you know, there's foreign managers like that. If they don't get a club, you know, if they don't save a club, they can always go back to their home countries and get a job pretty easily. But, I mean, how many of the bigger managers would have, you know, taken on that kind of challenge? So in that sense, I think it's, you know, it's a very respectable decision that Benitez stayed on, because, like I said, I don't think a lot of managers of the reputation, you know, which is somewhat in tatters, right, you know, as of now with Benitez, but, you know, his former reputation was pretty high, and, you know, he was regarded as arguably one of the best managers in Europe at one time. So for somebody to come from that kind of, you know, experienced background to stay on and try and manage the challenge of managing in the championship, like I said, I think that should be needs to be respected a good bit.
No, I would agree, because nobody thought he was going to stay. So fair play to him. All right. And more Liverpool news. So they spent the 27.5 on Wijnaldum. And then over the past 7 days here, they've recouped that money by making two moves of their own, two outs. The first one would be Jordan Ibe, making an 18 million pound. I keep saying pound because we're dealing with England. It's euros. 18 million euro move from Liverpool to Bournemouth. Any quick thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, recouping their money on a guy like Wijnaldum, I think that makes that an extremely good deal, even for Liverpool, because, you know, Wijnaldum probably, if it wasn't for Leicester's exploits, Wijnaldum arguably had one of the better overall seasons for a midfielder in terms of, you know, goal scoring and assist. I think what he had, I think he either scored double digits or just under double digits from midfield. So I think Wijnaldum can kind of fulfill the Gerrard role, where he can play, you know, that central midfield where he can sit back and get forward and pop in goals. So to be able to recoup the money basically right away on that kind of move, you know, that's a really good move on Liverpool's part, because they got a pretty decent player basically for nothing, because they recouped all the money on it just about.
Yeah, and then the second move made official today. There's a lot of rumors, but it's unfortunate for Liverpool fans that the Welsh Pirlo, Joe Allen.
I thought he was Welsh Javi. I get him all confused.
I don't know. He's making a 15.5 million euro move from Liverpool to Stoke.
Yeah, which I guess that's another sign that, you know, Stoke is not quite distancing himself, but, you know, another step away from, you know, the Tony Pulis long, you know, thuggish rugby ball, and, you know, going to try and play a little more on the deck, you know, with Mark Hughes.
Barcelona of the North.
Yeah. Maybe Messi will move there and show he can do it on a night in Stoke, but for Stoke.
Yeah. Well, that'd be interesting. That would put that regular saying to some real test.
Yeah, provided he pays taxes, of course.
Well, yes. I'm sure he would, being the law-abiding citizen that he is.
Yeah, or, you know, just do it like the old days and buy yourself a, you know, a pardon from the king.
That too. So, all right. So that's going to wrap up transfer talk for now. Usually we don't talk transfers, but some interesting things to talk about there. And a lot of it's Liverpool-centric. So we'll see how they get on. And I would imagine that we really won't see the transfer market pick up until a lot of these players who were in the Euros get back to their clubs, which I'm guessing is going to happen in the next 7 to 10 days after they've been given 2 or 3 weeks off. What do you think? You think, like, once we get into August, things might pick up?
All, Yeah, I think August is when the dam is going to burst, as it were. Although, like I said, I don't think there's going to be a flurry of activity like everybody thinks, because I think a lot of teams are going to – I don't think a lot of teams are going to invest all the new TV money in transfers. I think they're going to invest that in salaries to keep players, or to try and keep players. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I don't think we're going to see nearly the flurry of activity that some people are predicting.
Okay. Gotcha. So, all right, let's gun this out, and we'll bring in our favorite segment. And our favorite segment, of course, is This Week in Daftness. So let's bring out the British announcer, a lady, and let's get to it.
Two Daft Yanks presents This Week in Daftness.
I can't believe that the referee didn't give a penalty. That I can't believe. Something that looks a campaign.
We will have more transparency. What I will say is, out of emerging league, there are times when we are figuring out those rules as we go along.
This is not just a dream, it's a wet dream of orgasmic proportions.
How daft.
All right, This Week in Daftness. This week has an MLS flavor. And it's just in time because that prestigious All-Star game's coming up this week, ain't it, Corey?
Woo, man. Arsenal's in it, and I'm probably not even going to watch.
The mighty Arsenal versus the MLS. And I was joking with a buddy the other day that it's about the only time that I'll actually root for Arsenal.
Yeah, well, say, if you watch the game, you'll probably watch more Arsenal than me, because, like I said, I'm probably not even going to watch.
But, no, the reason the MLS is in focus on This Week in Daftness is because it's been since we talked to you last, so it still counts. It wasn't this week. How about this week's in Daftness?
We don't win on the segment all the time, so it's yeah. Yeah.
One, Don Garber, talking utter rubbish as usual, saying that I'm sure most of you saw this by now, that he took a proposal to the MLS Players Union, and he said, a way that MLS can boost their dismal TV ratings, and he didn't say dismal, I did, is to provide biometric activity of the players on the screens. And so his idea is to put heart rates and all this other stuff on the screen, and that's going to drive up TV ratings. That was his argument. And the Players Union, for privacy reasons, shot the idea down.
Well, yeah. Not just privacy reasons, they should have shot it down because it's a stupid idea. I mean, if you're watching soccer for biometrics, you know, guess what? You're not an actual soccer fan. Hate to tell you.
You don't want to know people's pulses or their blood pressure or maybe their speed. No. I don't know. I mean, what else is a biometric? I don't know. Would that include speed, distance, ran? No, I mean, we're talking about like
I'm sure they would have the basics of the heart rates, you know, the GPS, the ground covered, you know, it's basically all that crap, all that Fitbit crap that everybody's so gaga over now.
Exactly. So I don't know. And I don't know how that, I mean, really, if he thinks that that's going to drive up their TV ratings, then he's more insane than I think he is, which is pretty insane.
Well, yeah, like I said, if you got to rely on gimmicky bells and whistles for your broadcast for your sport, guess what? Your sport's not actually as successful as you've been claiming the last 3 years.
That's right. And the TV ratings are pretty bad. And as we talked about before, remember, TV ratings is where every league in the world in any sport makes their money. And MLS has one of the worst TV deals in pro sports on any continent. And
I mean, I wouldn't watch that, though, because American broadcast compared to overseas broadcast is already cluttered enough with all the damn tickers and embedded ads as it is.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I don't even know how that would work functionally. I guess you'd have a scrolling bar of everybody's pulse and their blood pressure. I don't know. Beats the heck out of me. Maybe how about fluctuating body weight, too? How much weight does a player lose by running around on the pitch in 90 degrees?
Why not just have a dual screen, you know, split screen of the live action and, you know, just a nonstop running reel of Landon Donovan career highlights, for Christ's sake. Who cares?
Yeah, that'd bring people in. But anyway, so just to show you how bad the TV ratings are now, I follow this from Awful Announcing. You should check it out. They give TV ratings for Fox and ESPN, but MLS matches, which are, you know, the national game of the week is on MLS, in the past month has, and I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, but this is the funny one. There was actually an MLS game actually had less ratings than a Major League Baseball rain delay. Yeah.
Not a game, but the rain delay.
The rain delay. Yes. Nice. You can look it up if you don't believe me. It was like 3 weeks ago. It said MLB rain delay was the title of the program.
Well, that's technically not fair because, I mean, in the old days, they used to run reruns of TWIB during the rain delays. So, you know, TWIB was a pretty good show, so the rain delays weren't so bad.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And other things that MLS has finished behind. How about the Canadian Football League? That's a juggernaut.
Yeah, it was still a, you know, pretty awesome game.
Yeah. And then here's my favorite one. This is this last weekend. The MLS game ranked behind a show entitled Obstacle Course, which I'm guessing must have been one of these, like, you know, Tough Mudder things where the people run through fire and, you know, have to pick up boulders and then have to crawl through shards of glass. Yeah. So more people were watching
One of those Battle Frog shows or whatever.
Yeah. Or, you know, yeah. So there you go. So MLS, they rank in the bottom 10% every week of ESPN programming. It's pretty shocking.
Well, yeah. The very fact that he even passed that on to the Players Association as a proposal to boost broadcast ratings is basically admitting that the on-field product is pretty crap.
So here's to you, Don Garber. Real man of genius. Maybe that would be a good one. We should start doing some fake Don Garber real man of genius commercials. I think those would be pretty popular.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, they've, like I said, we've been sit here for the last 3-4 years being told how successful the sport is getting, i.e. MLS, and how well the league's doing. And here, you know, he's boohooing and lamenting ways to, you know, to increase the TV ratings. Well, what happened to all that success you said you were having? I guess it was all bullshit, like we've said all along. Or I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, let's stop talking about amateur stuff. Right? No more amateur league talk. That's disrespectful to the amateur leagues out there. Sorry. Because some of those are actually ran pretty well. And they're actually, you know, open and competitive, unlike MLS. Anyway, so that's big news last week, Corey. And then this is something that I know that we talked about, I think, mid last season, was this this ever-growing problem of players confronting referees at every turn, over every decision, especially a certain club in blue who used to employ one Jose Mourinho as their manager, being the biggest aggressor in this. And so now, just a few weeks out, the FA and the Premier League have announced new player conduct rules. So should we highlight these really quickly for the boys and girls out there who may not have heard this?
Sure.
All right.
Let's make more laws that were already there, but go ahead.
Yes, that's true. Okay, so under these new guidelines, here are now offenses, and these are the direct rules from the rules they released that could earn a player a yellow card. Visibly disrespecting any match official. Okay. An aggressive response to a decision. Confronting an official face-to-face. Running towards an official to contest a decision. Offensive, insulting, or abusive language and or gestures towards match officials. Which I don't know how that doesn't fall within the disrespect of a match official, right? I mean, it's all the same. And then physical contact with a match official in a non-aggressive manner. And then a yellow card for at least one player when two or more from the same team surround a match official. So I guess let's just take these new yellow card rules What jumps out to you there?
Nothing specifically other than this is all stuff that's already on the books. They just don't have the courage to enforce it. I mean, disrespecting the official or, you know, vulgar language on the field, period, much less to an official, has always been technically what falls under. I forget how the actual rule reads, but it's something to do with sporting conduct. All that stuff has always technically fallen under that. But like I said, that's the kind of society we live in now, is we now have to specifically delineate specific behaviors that have always been technically illegal. But because match officials or the referee association doesn't have the courage to enforce certain laws, especially when it's certain players or teams that do it, we now have to create these extra laws to make it look like we're doing something. Cause that's what actually strikes me, is it's very similar to, you know, political, like real life legislation, that half the time they write a law now, the laws are already on the book, but you got to write another law to make it more, you know, more illegal, to make it look like you're doing something. When in reality, if you just enforce the laws that are already exist on the book, you know, you probably wouldn't even need the other law.
That's right. We'll get into more of that here. Here's the new red card offenses, which sound a lot like the yellow card offenses. So the problem I have is you're putting more on the plate on the official to interpret things, right? Which is going to be widely and wildly misinterpreted and misused at times, I can almost guarantee, because humans are human, right? Different officials are going to call things differently. But here we go. If a player confronts a match official and uses offensive, insulting, or abusive language and gestures towards them, well, I thought we already covered that as a yellow card offense. So what's the line between a yellow and a red? Again, that's up to the match official.
Well, yeah, because if it involves vulgarity, then, like I said, that's technically always been a red cardable offense. It's exactly. Just –
yeah.
It's just because one of the biggest perpetrators was England's captain, or you know, the two of the biggest perpetrators are two of England's captains. A lot of those refs don't want to send off, you know, they don't have the courage to send off John Terry and Wayne Rooney, even though vulgar language towards an official has always been a red cardable offense.
And here's the other one that I love. Physical contact with a match official in an aggressive or confrontational manner. Well, that's always been on the books, just like all these. You can't make contact with the match official. That's a red card, automatic red. But you've never seen it happen.
What was it? Nani got sent off. Was it Nani, or it was somebody from Man U got sent off for after getting called for a foul? He pulled Mark Clattenburg's shirt from behind.
Oh yeah, I think it was Clattenburg,
and he got sent off.
Yeah, that was
like
Nani,
I said. That's already been on the books. You can't touch it. Yeah, you can't touch an official. So like I said, that's always been on the books.
Yes.
It's just, like I said, it's just because we start letting stuff go because the stars start doing it, you know, a lot of match officials don't have the courage to send a lot of those guys off because, you know, because again, the media plays a part in this because they complain about, oh, well, the official lets this stuff get out of hand. He needs to crack down. He needs to get this game back under control. And then he starts sending people off. And then the media turns around and go, oh, well, you don't want to match – you know, to be decided 11-10. Yeah, you don't, but you also want to, you know, not have jackasses act like jackasses either.
Yeah, and this is important because it was really getting out of control, so I applaud the efforts. And then you got to think about the thing is, right, if you allow this to happen at the top levels of the game, it's going to feed down to the lower levels, and you don't want kids thinking this is acceptable behavior, because we're soon to the point to where if they don't weed it out, and I'm not sure if they can at this point in time, this is going to be the way the game's played from now on until who knows when, right?
Well, yeah, it's the same thing with diving. 20 years ago, the English acted like diving, you know, people who dove were, you know, a step under being the Prince of Darkness. Where now, because English players do it, all the English pundits, you know, it's now not diving. It's now, oh, he was clever there. Yeah, he's clever there because it's now such a part of the game that if you rail against diving, now you're just, you know, pissing in the wind, basically. So it's the same thing that, you know, I mean, times change, but like I said, a lot of people have played a part in this because we've let it go for so long. And because a lot of the biggest perpetrators of it were English stars, at least when it comes to, you know, vulgarity towards the ref.
Yeah. As I choked on Twitter, if these rules are enforced, Chelsea won't finish with 11 men one game this season.
Yeah, I mean, like I told you.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't mean to pick on them, but I mean, anybody could see that. I mean, geez, what they do. I mean, they contest every decision with several players getting in front of the ref. For the past 2 years, that's been who they are. And it may change. Conte may change the culture there. Hard to say.
Well, yeah, and that's because, again, that's one of those things. If you're not going to get sent off or it's not going to get enforced, then as a player, you know, a lot of times you're just going to take liberties with that and push the envelope until somebody does crack down on you. But like I said, to write new laws, you know, to make it doubly illegal now when, like I said, most of the stuff's already been on the book is just kind of amusing to me. But as I told you last week when I first read about this, my guess is what's going to happen is kind of like when they supposedly cracked down on diving a couple years ago. And then what was it? A couple years before that, there was some other call that they were, you know, they had a bird in their saddle about. And both times they basically, it was an issue for about 2 months. They called it for 2 months. And then come Christmas and come crunch time of the season, you know, they went back to calling it, you know, the regular way. So I have a feeling this is going to get enforced for August, September, and October, and it's going to get enforced against clubs like West Brom and not against clubs like Man U, Arsenal, Chelsea, etc.
Yeah, and to echo your point, and I forget who it was. I didn't write his name down. I should have, but TalkSport had a former head of official for the EPL and a former EPL referee, and he said, this isn't going to work. He's like, yeah, he agreed with you. He said, this will probably last about 6 weeks. And they'll really clamp down, and then after that, it'll be like the old ways. And he says it will probably last 6 weeks or until it's incorrectly used, where a team gets punished when they shouldn't. And then you'll go back to this old way. And he echoed us, hey, all these laws are on the books already. There's no need to write all this. Just enforce the rules. But he said it maybe had gone too late, but he said also that things might get pretty ugly in the beginning to where – you might have a red card in almost every game. It's possible. If they're going to really enforce this, I mean.
Yeah, if you enforce this by the letter of the law in how players interact with each other and officials now, then games will literally have at least one player sent off every game. So just that alone, I don't think it's going to be enforced or like most point of emphasis calls in leagues. It'll be enforced in certain times of the game, certain points early in the season, and then come crunch time when the games get more important, they'll back off because there's too much money involved and the big clubs or the big market clubs start complaining and, you know, like anything else, follow the money. So like I said, that would be my guess is West Brom does it, they'll get sent off. Chelsea does it, they'll get sent off. Chelsea will complain, and then they'll back off. Or somebody like Chelsea, you know, be it Man U, Arsenal, Spurs, whoever.
Yeah, that's, I think, how anybody who thinks about this critically is going to see. And we could be wrong, right? Maybe they send people off the first couple of weeks, and players say, hey, they're not joking around, and then maybe they start behaving.
Hey, it would just be like, you know, say you send me an email with national security sensitive documents. The FBI is going to prosecute you. You run for president, they probably won't prosecute you. It'll be similar to that. So like I said, West Brom does it, West Brom will get sent off. Chelsea does it, I doubt if Chelsea gets sent off.
It would be great, though, if John Terry was the first person to get sent off for this rule.
Or Wayne Rooney, because Wayne Rooney is the absolute worst with telling the ref to fuck off when he gets called for something.
In fact, didn't he get suspended for that a couple years ago? Now I think about it.
I don't know if he got suspended, but I know he got caught on camera basically telling the guy about six times in a row to fuck off. So like I said, he's definitely one of the worst defenders. But there again, if you're, you know, Johnny Nobody playing for Sunderland, you know, the second string right back, you get sent off for that. If you're Wayne Rooney, captain of England, you don't get sent off for that.
Yeah. You made that point. So we'll see. As I said, I'm skeptical on how it will be enforced, and I don't know if it is enforceable. They've left it unenforced for too long to where I don't know if you're going to change.
And there's somebody right now trying to they're Googling Johnny Nobody. So who's this guy? Sunderland signed. I never heard of Johnny Nobody.
He's this I don't know where he's from. Do we know? He's like a man with no nation.
Well, he's one of those curious English names like Drinkwater. He's a nobody. He's Johnny Nobody.
Johnny Nobody.
Danny Drinkwater and Johnny Nobody. Anyway.
All right. So it's fascinating to see how that will play out. So it just adds more, right, to the controversy, because you're right. The first time it happens, they're all applauding it. Oh, this is great for the game. But the first time someone gets sent off, they're going to be the commentators will say, this shouldn't happen. They're ruining the game. It's against the spirit of the game and blah, blah, blah.
Well, yeah, because my other take on it is they're doing this to try and distract everybody from people wanting to implement video technology. So let's let everybody complain about this for the next year and a half, and that way we can kind of, you know, people will be distracted and forget about video technology for a while maybe.
Ooh, that's not a bad idea.
That's what I'm saying. That's my other theory. That's my other cynical take on it. Like I said, you give the illusion of doing something, and that way you don't have to do the actual work. Because, like I said, all these rules are already on the books. So why implement them? Just enforce them. So, like I said, that's why my other cynical take is, let's make an issue out of this, and that way, you know, hopefully, you know, it'll buy us time on the digital technology crap.
I have to do some more reading, but here's another question, right? Because everything comes back to if the match official sees it and doesn't call it, it's okay. But what happens if there's clear evidence that the match official doesn't see of a guy cursing out with all the video, right? If Rooney does, you know, say F off ref, but the ref doesn't see it, but you could clearly read his lips, is there going to be retroactive punishment for stuff like this? I haven't heard anybody ask that question.
Well, no, because if it's a cardable offense, like you said, if the match official sees it and he puts it in the report, then technically the way the FA enforces their rules, if it's in the report, they can't go back and retroactively punish somebody. The only way they can retroactively punish somebody is if it's an incident that wasn't mentioned in the match report.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying, that if a match official doesn't see someone getting cursed at, but with all the camera angles, you're going to see that. So that's my question.
That's the other ridiculous thing on video technology is they don't want to use video technology to get a goal call right, but they want to use video technology to retroactively punish somebody and, you know, punish them for games that, you know, the red cardable offense should have taken effect in that game. Well, he gets to play the whole rest of the game, but then he gets punished, you know, against teams that he wasn't even playing against because of video evidence. So, like I said, what's the hypocrisy or what's their logic? Why are they okay with the hypocrisy of, you know, goals are so critical that we don't want to use video technology, you know, to get goal calls right because it slows down the game, but we're okay with we're okay with video technology for retroactive punishment, which oftentimes these fracases, you know, are the things that disrupt the game more than, you know, or they would disrupt the game longer than an official running over to a video monitor to get a goal call right.
Are you forgetting that there is goal line technology?
In the EPL?
Yeah. You're forgetting.
Okay, so then the video technology for, you know, things like offsides then.
Yeah, you forgot about Hawkeye already. EPL game has Hawkeye.
The watch thing.
The watch thing, which is the same as the tennis.
Okay, but you get the greater point because same thing with penalty calls. Everybody bitches and moans about how much penalty calls affect the game, so we got to get this right. but it, you know, everybody balks at the, not everybody, but the people in power balk at video technology for that, but we're okay with retroactive punishment for it. So
I gotcha. I just wanted to stop the, all the tweets we'd get about, hey, there's goal line technology in the EPL, if I let you go on that rant.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the same kind of people that complain when you call them out on their grammar. So who cares?
That's right. So excuse Corey and his forgetfulness that there's goal line technology in the Prem.
Yeah, especially when I'm making a greater point.
Yes, I know. Your point is still the same. Yeah, it applies to themes like red card offenses and penalties. Yes. Alrighty. All right. That's enough of that. We beat that into a bloody pulp.
And yeah.
We got some good news for you here, boys and girls. We can't officially announce it yet, but I am working very closely with a company who's going to come on board with us here, and we hope to maybe have that in place for next week to start advertising, but I'll give you a little hint. It will involve us working with a company where you'll be able to join a group, and in this group, you'll be able to pick players from week to week, and if those players score goals, you're going to get points. And whoever gets the points, the most points at the end of the year is going to get free swag. So I think you could probably put that together.
Yeah, maybe get you a free Conte shirt or no.
So maybe that vagueness should be enough for you to put the clue together. So we hope to announce that partnership very soon, and we're excited about it. I just need to, you know, cross the T's, dot the I's, and then we could start promoting that. So be sure to check onto the Twitters, because if it breaks in the next couple of days, that's where we'll announce it first. So again, that's at 2DAFTYanks on Twitter, and we have a good following on there, engaging with our fellow like-minded soccer zealots.
Yeah, another potential fantasy type thing that I can lose because I'll forget to make my picks.
That's right. And we'll thank everybody for participating in the Euro predictor, which Corey, as you said, forgot to do his picks. I'm not so good at picking games. That's why we're not predictors. We're very much analysts here. And I think I finished like mid pack. I had a strong second half of the tournament. So yeah, congrats.
I did okay in the days I remembered the pick. I just only remembered the pick like 4 out of 20 days.
So now we'll have to remember to pick a team each week in this Premier League doodaddy that we're going to be a part of. So that's going to be hard for you, but I'll make sure that you do it.
Yeah.
Or you know what I'll do is I'll have access to your account just in case. And if you don't make your picks, you're getting like all whole players or something. I'm going to pick whole starting 11.
I just want to play 11 strikers anyway, like all the Twitter, like all the Twitter transfer people. Just play the strikers. So 11 formation.
There you go. All right, boys and girls. Well, thank you very much for listening to the show. We're glad to be back. And as I said, next week we will do our annual managers preview, where we'll break down the new managers to the Premier League and the promoted managers. And that's going to be quite the show because, as you know, there's been a lot of big names and a lot of movement on the managerial front. So,
I'm interested to talk about this new Portuguese guy at Man U. I've never heard of this cat.
Oh, jeez. You're jumping in on my outro, but that's okay. Yeah, we'll talk about this new Portuguese guy. Unknown, this unknown guy. Yes. So, all right. So, for Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith saying we'll talk to you next week.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at 2daftyanks.com or at 2daftyanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the 2 Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.